today on this auspicious day of Vamana Dvadashi, we will read the 11th verse from the 22nd chapter of the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Bali Maharaja surrenders his life. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Only by providence have I been forcibly brought under your lotus feet and deprived of all my opulence. Because of the illusion created by temporary opulence, people in general who live under material conditions, facing accidental death at every moment, do not understand that this life is temporary. Only by providence have I been saved from that condition. Purport. Bali Maharaja appreciated the actions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although all the members of demoniac families, except Prahlada Maharaja and Bali Maharaja, considered Vishnu their eternal, traditional enemy. As described by Bali Maharaja, Lord Vishnu was actually not the enemy of the family, but the best friend of the family. The principle of this friendship has already been stated. Yasyaham anugrihnami harishye taddhanam shanai. The Lord bestows special favor upon his devotee by taking away all his material opulences. Bali Maharaja appreciated this behavior by the Lord. Therefore he said, Daivena nitaha prasabham tyajita shrih. It is to bring me to the right platform of eternal life that you have put me into these circumstances. Actually, everyone should fear the so-called society friendship and love, for which he works so hard all day and night. As indicated by Bali Maharaja by the words Janat Bhitaha from the previous verse, every devotee in Krishna consciousness should always be afraid of the common man engaged in pursuing material prosperity. Such a person is described as Pramatta, a madman chasing the will of the wisp. Such men do not know that after a hard struggle for life, one must change his body with no certainty of what kind of body he will receive next. Those who are completely established in Krishna conscious philosophy and who therefore understand the aim of life will never take to the activities of materialistic dog race. If a sincere devotee somehow does fall down, the Lord corrects him and saves him from gliding down to the darkest region of hellish life. Adanta gobhir vishatam tamishram punah punascharvita charvananam. The materialistic way of life is nothing but the repeated chewing of that which has already been chewed. Although there is no profit in such life, people are enamored of it because of uncontrolled senses. Nunam pramatah krute vikarma. Because of uncontrolled senses, people fully engage in sinful activities by which they get a body full of suffering. Bali Maharaja appreciated how the Lord had saved him from such a bewildered life of ignorance. He therefore said that his intelligence had been stunned. Stabdha matir nabudyate. He could not understand how the Supreme Personality of Godhead favors his devotees by forcibly stopping their materialistic activities. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Atham apyat mari postavantikam daivena nitah prasabham tyajita shrih. Idam kritatantika varti jivitam yaya druvam stabdhamatir nabudhyate. Only by providence have I been forcibly brought under the shelter, under your lotus feet and deprived of all my opulence. Because of my illusion created by temporary opulence, people in general, who live under the material conditions, facing accidental death at every moment, do not understand that this life is temporary. Only by providence have I been saved from that condition. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyadesha Tarine Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrindam Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Yantah pravishya mama vachim imam prasuptam sanjeevaya takila shakti darasvadamna anyam chahasta charana shravanat vagadim prananama bhagavate purushaya tumyam svasyastu vishvasya kalah prasidatam dayanta bhutani shivam mithodiya manascha badram bhajata tadokshaje Avishyatam no matira pyahaituki. So today we are celebrating the surrender of Bali Maharaj. Even though this day, Vamana Dvadashi or Shravana Dvadashi, the day of the bright half of the month of Bhadra, when the moon resides at Shravana Nakshatra, very auspicious day by astrological calculations. Even though we call this day as appearance day of Vamanadev, the most significant celebration which we are doing today is to remember how Bali Maharaj surrendered completely everything which he had to the lotus feet of Vamanadev. So that's the festival of surrender, and the result of this festival, as much as when we are celebrating Krishna Janmashtami, and this festival signifies that Krishna should be born within our heart, that the remembrance of beautiful, charming boy Krishna should be firmly established within our heart. As much as this day of the year, when we're celebrating, the proper celebration is to achieve the same spirit of self-surrender. If we don't achieve the same spirit of self-surrender, and for that we're telling this story, for that we're trying to meditate on this pastime described in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the real celebration of Vamanadev's appearance. How, by understanding that God is there, we at the same time understand that we belong to God. And nothing belongs to us. Nothing in reality belongs to us. That's the understanding which Bali Maharaj obtained by Lord Vamanadev's mercy on this day. And that's the understanding which we should strive or aspire to acquire through meditating on this pastime. That's the real celebration of Vamana Dvadashi. And of course today also is the appearance day of Srila Jiva Goswami, who by his life of complete surrender and dedication to his spiritual master Srila Rupa Goswami also exemplify the same spirit of self-surrender. So the whole story, as you probably know, is very beautiful, and it is described in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is according to meditation on the form of the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam is nothing but the living representation of the Lord, a literary incarnation of the Lord. So 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is the lotus hands of the Lord. 7th and 8th cantos, the 7th canto is his arms, by which he fights the demons and eradicates the demonic element from our heart as well. But the 8th canto is his lotus hand, by which he gives and takes, or rather first takes, then gives. So that's the essence and the essential message of the 8th canto. The 8th canto is describing how different people in different, or different heroes of Srimad Bhagavatam, in different conditions, they become desperate. Krishna apparently, very cruelly, takes away their possessions, like in case of Gajendra, which is the first story of Srimad Bhagavatam, or in case of demigods, in case of the second story of this 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, or, of course, in case of Bali Maharaja. So first, Krishna takes away, snatches, cruelly, really cruelly, and then gives. But in between, what happens, when Krishna takes away everything, the devotee, at this moment of time, when Krishna mercifully takes away everything from him, the devotee feels immense gratitude. And by expressing this immense gratitude, he melts the heart of the Lord. And the Lord, reciprocating with this gratitude, after taking away everything, gives so much that the devotee cannot hold. This is what Srila Prabhupada explained. He said that, you know, Krishna has 10 hands, and if he wants to take away from you with his 10 hands, what you can hold with your 2 hands. But then when he wants to give with his 10 hands, what you can hold with your 2 hands, you know. He will give much more than you can even hold or imagine to hold. So, and this verse which we read today is the heartfelt prayers of surrender by Bali Maharaj. And this is the culmination of the whole story. Again, the dynamic of the story is that first Krishna deprives his devotee of everything, and then the devotee completely surrenders. Or rather, he surrenders even before, by the encounter with the Lord in the form of his, you know, mercy. And then he expresses visibly his surrender, and then the Lord gives. So let's remember story, because it's proper. On these days we have to deeply meditate on different details of the story to understand it, to really try to establish this whole story within our heart. We all know how the story began, how first Bali Maharaj was killed. He was killed in the battle with demigods, and Shukracharya, who had the art of Sanjivani, who had the art of who had special mantra and special herbs, he revived him back together with so many other demons. Despite The problems which demons encountered in this fight, Shukracharya saved the day. He really revived everyone. And being very grateful to Shukracharya, Bali Maharaja surrendered to him and accepted him as his spiritual master. And because he was a very obedient disciple, following very strictly to his spiritual master, under the guidance of Shukracharya, he performed Vishvajit Yagya. This is a very special Vedic ceremony which is meant to help somebody who performs this Yagya to conquer over the whole world. So Yagya was extremely successful, and as a result of this, the demons became very strong, and they launched the war with the demigods. And when Indra, in fear, desperately approached Brihaspati and said, "What shall we do?" Brihaspati told him, "Just run away from your kingdom. There is nothing else you can do because you are very weak and Bali Maharaj is very strong. He has such a dedication and devotion to Brahmanas. He serves his Guru Maharaj and Brahmanas so nicely that you will never be able to do anything against him because you are a proud fellow. Your pride made you completely weak. So there is no other recourse. You have to just retreat to some retreat center from your heavenly planets." And so that was the beginning of the story when Bali Maharaj established himself as the king of the heavenly planets and was ruling there very nicely. And then Srimad Bhagavatam describes that how Aditi, mother of Indra and other demigods, became very depressed and morose. And when Kashyapa Muni, her husband, came back home, he saw that the whole, you know, household is in complete darkness. He just entered into this gloomy atmosphere. You know, when somebody is depressed, you know, he's sitting somewhere in his little apartment and he doesn't even lit the light and it's dark and everything is dirty, and you enter into this room and you become depressed yourself. So the same happened with Kashyapa Muni. Kashyapa Muni enters his ashram, and instead of entering ashram, he's entering into a depressed loka, into the loka of depression. He sees this, you know, complete disorder everywhere, and he sees his wife, and his wife is gloomy and sad, and he asks, "What happened? Did you not feed the guest? Did you transgress some dharma? Because what else could be the reason of your depression?" It's actually very important teaching of this story, because Kashyapa Muni wants to teach us that when we are depressed, we shouldn't blame the circumstances, we shouldn't blame the fate, the providence, we should blame ourselves, we should look into ourselves and see what wrong did we do. Did we do something wrong which caused such depressed condition of our consciousness? Because the depression means that the tamagun, the mode of ignorance, took over our mind and our heart. And because of this, we find ourselves in this desperate condition of life. So he describes different possibilities how this could come up, to Aditi. But she said, no, my dear Lord, this is not the reason. The reason is that my sons, my little cute sons like Indra, they are deprived of their possessions. And Kashyapa Muni hears this and he says, oh my goodness, Maya of the Lord is so strong. It's unbelievable. You know, you're supposed to know better. You're such an intelligent lady. You're supposed to know that nobody is your son. It's just temporary relationship which has nothing to do with your eternal constitutional position. It has nothing to do with reality. It's just an illusion created by the Lord, and you fell the victim of this illusion. And, you know, Aditi, when you're depressed, philosophy doesn't enter your ears. You know, there is some blockage. And Aditi, she was crying and crying and crying. Yes, maybe I'm an illusion, but still, please save me. This is how it usually works, you know. Philosophy can only be understood when you're okay, but when you're not okay, and philosophy doesn't rings the bell, doesn't reverberate within your heart, it means that you actually don't know the philosophy. Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Kornita ki jai. So Kashyapa Muni mercifully gives the procedure, the special ritual which Aditi is supposed to do to fulfill her desire. And actually, the real purpose of Vedic rituals is to purify the heart. Fulfilling of the desire is just insignificant side effect of the ritual. you will fulfill your desire by performing certain ritual, by following it strictly. He explains in all details how she should do this payavrata. For 12 days she should only take milk and in this way purify the body and the mind and the heart and everything. But the real purpose of all these rituals is to make you pure. So much so that, you know, you forget about your desires. You forget about this maya. So he gives this ritual as the way of kind of cheating Aditi. And Aditi performs this ritual very strictly. And it is said that at the end of her ritual, when she was successful by performing this tapasya of drinking only milk and worshipping the Lord with all her heart, at the end of her ritual, Krishna enters the mind of Kashyapa. So he was rewarded by the presence of Krishna in his mind. And from his mind, Kashyapa transformed Krishna into the womb of Aditi, and she became pregnant. And on an auspicious day, this day of the year, Vamana Dvadashi, the Lord appeared in all his glory with four hands, with all his weapons and all his dress and everything, which is a part of his Swarup. You know, when he appears, he always appears in with his weapons, because weapons is not, you cannot really deprive him from his weapons. And then, you know, after giving for a short while the darshan of his complete four-armed forms, he took the form, the shape of little cute boy, Vamanadev. Actually, Srila Prabhupada explains in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the third chapter where he describes different incarnations of the Lord, that Vamanadev represents the beauty of the Lord. Usually dwarfs are not really beautiful to look at. They are, you know, they have ugly faces with all kinds of wrinkles. But when Krishna appeared, he became the personification of beauty. Srila Prabhupada explains that Mahini, it's actually from Lagu Bhagavatamrita by Rupa Goswami, Mahini Murti, Balaram and Vamana Dev, they are manifestations of the opulence of beauty of the Supreme Lord. So this beauty personified, Vamana Dev appeared in front of Kashyapa and Aditi in this beautiful form because they wanted to see him in such a form. He first appeared in four-armed form, but then very quickly changed his form because reciprocating with their desire. Yat-yat-diya-tat-tat-vapuh. It is said in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that the Lord accepts the form, the rupa, which according to the desire or according to the meditation of the devotee. Yat yat diya, how you meditate on the Lord, he will take this particular shape. Therefore, it's very important to know upon which form of the Lord we should meditate. Our meditation should be very concrete and quite direct. So he took form of this beautiful boy, and after pompous celebration of his first birthday, when Sun God himself gave him Upanayana and ceremony, Diksha ceremony, the Sun God himself chanted a Gayatri mantra into his ear. Om Bhur Bhuvah Svaha Tat Savitur, and so on and so forth. So, you know, of course, Vamanadev doesn't need, Gayatri mantra from Sun God, but nevertheless, the ceremony was performed properly. Brihaspati himself put the Brahmin thread on his body, and, Kashyapa Muni gave him Kushagras belt. So he was fully equipped, he was dressed nicely, and he went to Bali Maharaj because in the meantime, Bali Maharaj decided to become even stronger. He's already the ruler of the whole universe, but he knows that this position is vulnerable. No matter how strong you become, sooner or later you may lose this. So to make sure that he keeps this position, he performs Ashwamedha Yajna to establish himself very firmly on the bank of Narmada River under the expert guidance of Shukracharya and so many other priests of Bhrigu family. So he is there, and all of a sudden this effulgent little boy appears there, and everyone just is amazed. Some brahmachari with danda and brahmachari clothes and kushagras belt and, paka brahmachari. Bali Maharaj, he looks at him. And this is the most important moment. Because actually, even though he expresses his Atmanivedana, his self-surrender in these verses, in these prayers, but the actual act of his self-surrender took place when he saw Vamanadev. When he saw his beauty and he was completely enamored by his charm and beauty, and at that moment, he decided, I'm ready to give to him everything. So at that moment, he was so pleased, and he said, please take something, please take something from me. Of course, there was a little pride involved in this, and for that, Krishna is punishing him later. But there was very little pride. Actually, Bali Maharaj was mostly, was overwhelmed by this emotion. Yes, I want to give something. You're so beautiful. Take something from me. But of course, this ahankar was still a little bit there. Take something from me. Later, Krishna will tell him, I punished you because of this fault. Which fault? The fault was, I will give something to you. That was the fault. What's wrong with this? I is wrong. Who am I to give? I have nothing in my possession. That's the main point of the whole story. The main point when you become sane, and when you become, when you lose this pramatta, the madness, the intoxication of the wealth, as Srila Prabhupada explains in this purport, then there is no I, there is no mine. You know, you cannot give anything. You can only give yourself. And even this you cannot do because you know that you don't belong to yourself anyway. You already his. So that's so little pride was there, but he was very pleased. And of course, Vamanadev says, so give me just 3 steps of land. I don't need much, you know, only 3 steps. You know, it's usual Krishna's trick. You know, give me 1 fruit, 1 leaf, you know, patram pushpam palam tayam, and then yad karoshi yadashnasi, give me everything. So that's his usual behavior. You know, I don't need much. Just little bit, no problem. And Bali Maharaj says, well, you're not intelligent, you know, you look very intelligent, but it appears from your actions and from your words that you're not very intelligent. And I can give you so much. And again, this pride, I can give you so much. And Krishna says, no, I don't need much from you. Just give me little. Just give me 3 steps. And Bali Maharaj says, okay, if you want to take 3 steps, take 3 steps. And Krishna says, yes, you promised to me. And Bali Maharaj says, yes. If you promise to me, you have to do the ritual. You have to do sankalpa, because the promise without sankalpa is just empty words. Like we know perfectly well in our own example. You know, we promise so many things, but we don't do sankalpa. Sankalpa means the determination within the heart. I gave this promise and I will stick to this promise no matter what. No matter what happened with me, I will stick to this promise, I will do it. So Vamanadev is not in a hurry to, you know, to accept the promise of Bali Maharaj. And he said, do it properly. And Bali Maharaj said, no problem, of course I'll do it properly. And he takes the bowl to do achman and to do sankalpa. Sankalpa, you have to pour some water on your heart or on your hand and then pour it down on the earth. And by doing this, making sankalpa, making determination, chanting some mantras, this is yours, I'm giving it to you. And then Shukracharya, who is standing next to Bali Maharaj, he became completely hysterical. He starts panicking. What are you doing? Stop it. He will cheat you. He will take everything from you. Don't do it. And Bali Maharaj looks at him and says, no, I already promised. How can I take my word back? He said, no, you promised, but you didn't say Om. You know, if you promise something, you first have to say Om. Om means God. Then you have to fulfill your promise. But you didn't say Om, so no problem. There is no transgression of Dharma. So Shukracharya very elaborately describes to him all different kinds of tricks. You know, I know Dharma. You don't know Dharma. You will not, you know, really transgress any Dharma if you don't fulfill this promise, because you need money for yourself. How you can perform Dharma without money? You know, you are so pious, you know, how you can, you know, and he will take everything from you. You know, you need money for yourself and he will take everything from you. You should divide very carefully your money into 5 parts and, you know, 1 part is for me. And then for performing your Dharma and so many other important things, and you have your wife and your children and your home, and you have to pay the bills and taxes, and you know, so, don't do it. Don't do it. And then Bali Maharaj looks at him. And there is a pause. And this is a very significant pause where some struggle is there. Actually, this is another point. The first point of surrender when Bali Maharaj sees the beauty of the Lord. And he is overwhelmed and charmed and feeling some irresistible attraction to the Lord. The second point is this. Now he is in dilemma. He should either reject his guru or follow what his heart tells him to do. And it's a very difficult choice because, you know, especially for people in Vedic culture, it's extremely difficult to make this choice, to reject guru. To reject guru means to reject everything, means to reject the prospect of happiness. You know, it's nowadays, of course, it's no problem. You know, people are used to it. But in proper culture, people know that you cannot reject your guru. You cannot reject your guru. Because by rejecting guru, you are violating the most essential, you know, principle. You're violating this because you know, guru represents God. You know, by rejecting Guru Jan, you cannot reject, it is said, you cannot reject your father, you cannot reject your mother, you cannot reject your elder brother, you cannot reject your guru. They are all Guru Jan. You can only be happy. There is, you know, there is very strict condition. You can only be happy if you strictly follow and surrender to these principles. And, you know, most of all, you can't reject your guru, your spiritual master. Because this is following them, surrendering to them, is the key to success in all areas of life. You cannot do this. So there is this moment, this suspense, and everyone is looking, and Shukracharya is there, and he's trying to figure out what is going to happen. And he's already, you know, already kind of sure that, yeah, he will do. He's a nice boy. He always followed me. but then Bali Maharaj looks at Shukracharya and says, no, I cannot do this. I have to give. I'm really sorry. Please forgive me. And he gives his counter arguments. He actually argues with his guru and defeats his guru. He says, no, under no circumstances we should, no matter what, even if we will be deprived of all our possessions, we cannot lose our dignity. We have to follow what we promised. We have to do. We have to give, and I have to give, and I will give. And I promise to... when shall I... 8:30, so we should finish the class now. No? Okay. Let me go a little bit more. Otherwise, it's not fair, because we still didn't start the verse. It was the prelude. So he says, I cannot do this. No, I cannot do. I cannot really do this. I have to give. So he said, yes, I'm promising to you. And he takes his bowl, special bowl, Achaman bowl, to Dusankalpa. And Shukracharya, trying to save the situation, and he takes the shape of a fly. It is not described in Srimad Bhagavatam, but it is described in Nrisimha Purana and some other Puranas. He turns into fly, and he enters into this bowl, Achaman bowl, and he sticks into this little, how you call this, nose. yeah, nose hole of the Sachaman bowl as a fly, and he is just there, and the water is not coming. You know, and Bali Maharaj is trying to put water, and Shukracharya is there, and he's holding the fort, you know, by all his strength and mystical power, you know, water is not coming. And then little Vamanadev, he sees the difficulties, and he comes to the help of Bali Maharaj. He knows what is happening, so he takes a little blade of kusha grass. Kusha grass is very sharp, and he picks the pokes the eye of Shukracharya. You know, he pokes one eye of Shukracharya and pushes him in, and Shukracharya is just, you know, since then he has only one eye. And basically the explanation of this is that Vamanadev wants to say that you only see the scriptures with one eye. You anyway only see the scriptures with one eye. You're already blind with one eye. Let me, you know, establish it firmly that you're anyway blind with one eye. You only see the material side of the scriptures. In the scriptures, you only see how to get the prosperity, and you don't know anything else. So let's poke one eye. And so Shukracharya, he's, the impediment is removed by Vamanadev, and Bali Maharaj puts water, and he said, yes, take 3 steps of land, this is yours. And of course we know then, at this moment of time, Vamanadev all of a sudden becomes Trivikram. He takes this, by the first step he covers the whole earth, and by the second step he covers the heavenly planets, and by his body, by expanding his body, he becomes the universe. But the reality is that even though we say, and for the sake of the story, for the sake of the flow of the story, it's like this, but what's happening in reality, Krishna is already the whole universe. The very first word, the very first name of Krishna in Vishnu Sahasranam is Vishva. He's the universe. He is the whole world. So he is there, but we don't see it. So at this moment of time, when the critical moment came, when Bali Maharaj confirmed, yes, I want to surrender. When Vamanadev asked him, are you sure you want to surrender? And Bali Maharaj said, yes, I'm sure, I want to surrender. I promise to you, I'm surrendered soul to you. So at this moment of time, actually what happened, Bali Maharaj got real eyes to see. He saw the universal form of the Lord. And everyone else also saw it because of the influence of Bali Maharaj. The surrender of Bali Maharaj, when he relinquished completely his false ego, revealed to him the reality, which was hidden from him till this moment of time. What happens with us, because we have false ego, the false ego doesn't allow us to see reality as it is. Doesn't allow us to see that God is everywhere, that everything belongs to God, that everything is God's. This is a beautiful description of this in Srimad Bhagavatam in the 8th canto, how he sees that Lord is everything. And nothing belongs to me. There is no possession of mine. Nothing really is mine. So he sees it very clearly, and he becomes immensely pleased. So this is the dynamic of surrender. First, there is initial attraction by the beauty of the Lord, by the beauty of his philosophy of the Lord. You know, we have some initial attraction. Then the Lord tests us. Are you sure? Are you sure you want to surrender? Are you sure that this is what you want to do? And when we confirm, yes, yes, my Lord, I'm yours. Yes, I understood. I belong to you. At this moment of time, then the Lord, by giving His mercy, can reveal to us the reality. And this is how it is described in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. The reality was revealed. This Trivikram form of the Lord, which is very famous in the Vedas, in Rig Veda He is called Trivikram, because he made these three big steps. So this form was revealed to Bali Maharaj, and Bali Maharaj became, at this moment of time, he understood, I was wrong. And this moment of time, he understood, I was wrong when I told that I'm giving to you because there's nothing I can give to him. Everything is already his. I cannot give anything to him. So he surrenders completely, and the Lord says, okay, my dear Bali, you promised to me to give three steps of land. Two steps I made. Where shall I make the third step? So, and he says, you're actually a cheater. You cheated me. You didn't fulfill your promise because you promised to me to give three steps of land, but, you know, it's still not enough. By two steps I covered everything. Where should I make the third step? And because you cheated me, because you said, I'll give to you, I'll punish you, you will go to hell. Because you completely violated Dharma, because you didn't fulfill your promise, because you're a sinner, you know, you will go to hell and you will suffer in hell. So he says this to Bali Maharaj, and Bali Maharaj is just smiling. He's in complete bliss. The Lord himself says, I'll send you to hell. And Bali Maharaj says, oh yeah, really? Thank you very much. So that's the real surrender. You know, I know you're my Lord, no matter what you do with me. Ashlishya Vavadaratam Pinashtu Mama Darshanam Marmahadam Karotu Vav. Whatever you do to me, I'm yours. I'm yours, and I'm the happiest today because you showed it to me. So this is the time when Bali Maharaj starts his prayers. And the verse which we read today, the 11th verse, so that was the prelude, so the lecture starts now. So the verse which we read today is the last verse of his prayers. And actually, even though apparently, this is why we need explanations and commentaries, because if we read these prayers, it seems like that Bali Maharaj is angry at Vamanadev. Like here he calls him Atmaripu. You are the enemy of our family, of our whole tradition. He calls him Atmaripu. You know, if it was not for the commentaries, we would never understand. In the first verse, the first prayer which he gives, very interesting prayer. Unfortunately, I don't have time to explain all of them. But in the first verse of the prayers, he calls him Uttama Shloka. You know, here's somebody, you know, who cheated you. Somebody who just pronounced the curse to you. Somebody who really was not honest and did something mean to you. And Bali Maharaj stands there and says, you Uttama Shloka, all the poets glorify you with the chosen verses. And actually, he's very sarcastic. Bali Maharaj is very sarcastic. Yes, yes, you're Uttama Shloka. Your fame spread all over the world. Here you came as a beggar to me. You know, you are the husband of the goddess of fortune, and you came as a beggar to me. You know, and you disgraced yourself by this, and you did so many strange things. Now you just pronounced the curse. You want me to go to hell, and I'm ready to go to hell. You are Uttama Shloka. You know, everyone is glorifying you because you behave in such a strange manner. Nobody can understand and figure out why you're doing what you're doing. So Bali Maharaj is, at the same time, he's really enjoying this whole thing, this whole episode, because he knew the reality. He is now he is the completely surrendered soul, because the reality was revealed to you, to him, due to his determination and due to his honesty and sincerity. So he's saying all these things and calls Krishna initially sarcastically. And here he says, very important, just a few words about this verse. Atha, therefore, aham apyatmaripo tavantikam. Yo atmaripu. You are, as Prabhupada translates, you are the traditional enemy of our family. But Atmaripu also means, the implication here, very important implication here is that Atmaripu means, Atma means, we all know, something which we identify with. Atma means the body, Atma means the mind. When he calls Atmaripu, he says, oh, you are the enemy of my body and my mind, but not the enemy of my soul. You're a real friend of my soul, because you really deprived me from this misidentification, from this illusory identification with the body and the soul. Therefore, you are Atmaripu. And moreover, you are Atmaripu because you are the enemy of my Ahankar. And thank you very much for being the enemy of my false ego. You completely crushed my false ego. First you crushed my false ego by your beauty, then you crushed my false ego by taking, snatching away everything from me and showing to me that nothing belongs to me. And, you know, you crushed my false ego. False ego should be crushed very sorely, and that's actually the duty of God or spiritual master. You know, because even if you have 1,000 parts of the false ego is a very amazing organ. You know, we know that some organs can regenerate. You know, you cut some parts of it and then it becomes full. So false ego is such, if you have a little trace of false ego, it will be grown up to the full extent in no time. So you have to be sorely deprived of your false ego. And that's what Atmanivedanam means. Atmanivedanam means, okay, I understood. Nothing belongs to me. So here he says, you Atmaripu, you destroyed my false ego. You completely smashed my false ego. I don't have my false ego. Daivena, why did it happen? Daivena, because of the providence. But by Daivena, he really means because Prahlad Maharaj saved me. Because I am the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj, and because he is such a surrendered soul. So this is the daiva, this is the fortune. This is the reason, this is the cause behind this whole episode. I am only saved and completely freed from this burden of false ego, which is such a heavy burden upon our shoulders, that because of daiva, and daiva means my fortune of being Prahlad Maharaj's grandson. And very soon Prahlad Maharaj will appear on the scene and he will say, oh yeah, thank you very much, my dear Lord, that you did this to my nice little grandson. So, daivena nitah prasabham tyajita shri. You deprived me by this shri. Shri literally means opulence. Shri means dazzling opulence. Opulence has this dazzling property. It dazzles and it blinds us. So he says, you deprived me from this opulence, and by depriving me by force, you deprived me by this opulence, and by depriving me of this opulence, you made me see the reality. Because dazzling effulgence of the opulence does not blind me anymore. And he says that this opulence is so dangerous that it really bewilders every living entity. Every living entity imagines that something belongs to him, whereas in reality nothing belongs to him. Every living entity tries to enjoy the property, little property which he thinks belongs to him. And as a result of this, because they are stabdomatir, because they are completely dull, as the result of this, they cannot understand the impermanent nature of this life. As a result of this hope that I will become happy by enjoying these opulences which are given to me, they forget that the life can finish at any moment. They forget the reality. They forget that the Lord is behind this. And this is the illusion. And now I'm completely free from this illusion. Nothing belongs to me. Nothing. The last thing which I will tell, because it's late. The very last thing. There is a very important principle in Mimamsa Sutra, which actually is illustrated by this particular pastime. In Mimamsa Sutra, it is said that if two things are subordinate to some other things, subsidiary to some main thing, then these two things, which subordinate to the main thing, do not have relationship to each other. Do not have independent relationship to each other. The any relationship which they have, which they can have only through this main principle which they belong to or which they subsidiary to. So in application to our life, why it is illustrated here, you know, in the pursuit of our life, in the endeavors of our life, in the endeavors to become successful, we are trying to enter into relationship with some other people, and we are trying to enter into relationship with some properties, with some energy, with some things. But if we understand this principle very well, that we cannot really become satisfied by entering into relationship with something which is subsidiary, independently of the relationship with the main principle to whom this whole thing belongs, we will never be satisfied by this relationship. And that is proven again and again and again in this world. We are trying to enter into some independent relationship. We always feel something is lacking. The relationship may be nice, but still there is no complete satisfaction. We are trying to enter into relationship with the property, with this, with that, with possession, with name, with fame, with glory. If we are trying to do it independently, without understanding this all belongs to the Lord, this all belongs to God, and I can only enter into the relationship with all these things if I am related to God, then all our attempts will fail. We will fail miserably. So the main point of this story, why self-surrender is necessary, because by self-surrender, you can get everything. Because by self-surrender, entering into relationship with the Lord, you're entering into relationship with everything else. Whereas by trying to enter into relationship with everything else independently of your relationship with the Supreme Lord, you will ultimately be frustrated. You will ultimately fail because it's not possible. It's not possible. you can only, you can have everything. And when Vamanadeva hears these prayers and sees how blissful Bali Maharaj is, he basically wants to show, see how glorious my devotee is. When he becomes real devotee, when reality becomes revealed to him, he understands everything. So he says, okay, you know, yes, you will go to hell, but this hell will be much better than this heaven. I will make this hell much better than the heaven, and you will be there. And Shukracharya will be with you, no problem. He's your guru. He will also enjoy the opulence which I will give. I will give you everything, no problem. Now you can have everything which you want, because now you know how to properly enter into the relationship with this through being related to me. And moreover, I will become your bodyguard. And I will stay with you all the time. So this is, you know, this is the little reward for your complete self-surrender. So that's the beautiful story of Srimad Bhagavatam, which we're celebrating. And as I said, we are celebrating this self-surrender. How important it is to understand the dynamic of self-surrender and how the self-surrender is the real key for success in our life. Understanding reality, which is represented by Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda on our altar. And coming to them and saying, I am yours, nothing belongs to me, everything is yours. And I am only entering into relationship with anything else as much as I am related to you. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.